From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Final furlong of the Nyquist, highly motivated, just striding forward to take the lead for Javier Castellano. It is highly motivated who will take the opener. Rocketry is running on from the outside. What a performance by Rocketry from way back to get up to win it. For Erad Ortiz Jr., Nashville under no stress whatsoever, winning it in 1 minute, 7.89 seconds. Simply incredible. Never ask for a thing. Nashville track record.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Gamine, John Velasquez rolling on home to win the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. All Gamine. Be a multiple horse photo for second, third, and fourth. The final time, 1 minute, 20.2 seconds. Track record. Front-running victory for Joel Rosario and Nick Sko in the Big Ass Fans Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. 1 minute, 33.85 seconds. Track record. Authentic, who strides away in the Keeneland Sunset for John Velasquez. Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, rated stakes.
Track record, track record, track record. Are you one of the people who felt like Keeneland's main track was a bit, let's say, souped up during this year's Breeders' Cup? Well, six track record performances over the 2 days makes that a legitimate question. And Marcus Hirsch of the Daily Racing Forum, he certainly did. He tweeted, referring to Gamine's track record-setting victory in the Filly and Mare Sprint, broke the track record by 1.12 seconds. It's a shame this has to be done to the track surface. We can appreciate greatness without making things so fast. Jeremy Balin of Bet America agreed. He tweeted, why must we always gear tracks up for big days? Well, you might ask, what are you bringing this up now for, Baron? The Breeders' Cup was 5 weeks ago. Well, it's because longtime racing publicist Jim Mulvihill wrote a very thorough article this past week that appeared on thoroughbredracing.com, where he explored the issue of racetracks, quote-unquote, souping up their surfaces on big days. In particular, this year's Breeders' Cup at Keeneland. And he tackles the issue from all sides. Horse players, horsemen, and racetrack officials. And Jim's going to be with me at 8:35 Eastern to discuss this issue, discuss the article that he wrote earlier this week. Good morning, everyone. Officially, welcome to another jam-packed edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 10 a.m. Eastern. You, of course, are tuned into the show throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or digitally, and you're listening there with our live streaming or podcast of the show on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, in addition to talking about the issue of tracks speeding up their racing surfaces on big days, which, by the way, let's face it, is really nothing new. We've heard about this for decades. I'm also going to take a look at Gulfstream's five stakes races, four of those which are graded stakes, set to be contested later this afternoon. Gulfstream handicapper Jason Blewett will be with me to preview those races in just a few minutes at 8:15 Eastern. Again, Jim Mulvihill at 8:35 Eastern time, and at 9 o'clock, I'll spend some time with trainer Jack Sisterson, whose 2020 has actually been pretty good, probably better than most. Jack saddled his second Grade 1 winner of the year last Saturday at Aqueduct when True Timber rolled to a 5.5-length victory in the Cigar Mile with Kendrick Carmouche in the saddle. And you're going to hear more from Kendrick, by the way, later in the program, too. But, you know, there's a saying that good things happen to good people. And that is certainly the case with Jack Sisterson, who has been donating a portion of his earnings this year to the Rein Foundation, R-E-I-N, the Rein Fund, actually, not Foundation, the Rein Fund, which helps assist members of the racing industry who have been impacted by COVID-19. backstretch workers, their families, people at the racetracks. It's a wonderful thing. And Jack has been donating a portion of his earnings to that fund throughout the year. So it's great to see him having this kind of success in 2020. And when you think about good people, longtime turf writer Tom Padula is going to be here at 9:20 Eastern Time to talk about his recent conversations with Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito and Hall of Fame basketball coach Rick Pitino, both of whom, as you know, extremely passionate about the sport of thoroughbred racing. Should be fun to catch up with Tom. And I'm going to wrap things up with Mike Brunker, the assistant editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. On December 3rd, Mike wrote an article which appeared in that newspaper titled "Safe Racing at Del Mar and Santa Anita Goes Nearly Unnoticed." That was the title of his column. And you hear that, maybe your first reaction was like mine. What? What? That story wasn't blasted all over Good Morning America or CNN or headline news? You didn't hear about it on your local newscast? Nobody wanted to discuss the good news associated with these race, with those recent meets? The positive news about the yeoman's work the folks at those tracks did and continue to do that resulted in an outstanding safety record during those meets in 2020? Nobody? Ray Pollock of the Pollock Report points out that Santa Anita concluded the autumn meet as the safest racetrack in the nation. Let me say that again. Santa Anita Park concluded the autumn meet as the safest racetrack in the nation. You didn't see that on CNN, did you? Without a single racing or training fatality since the horses returned from Del Mar on September 5th. During that time period, think about this, which includes the 16-day autumn racing meet, which, of course, was delayed because of the Bobcat fire in the neighborhood and all of those things in the San Gabriel Mountains. But you had 1,106 horses race over the dirt track and turf course at Santa Anita. Additionally, horses recorded over 51,200 training sessions, including 3,771 timed workouts over the main track and 487 over the training track. The main dirt track at Santa Anita has not had a racing fatality in 2020, including the 2019-2020 winter spring meet, which began in December. And, oh, by the way, at Del Mar, all they did was continue their industry-leading safety record at the recently concluded Bing Crosby meet. Nobody wanted to talk about that? Nobody? Where's PETA now? I can't hear you. Yeah, well, Mike Brunker made sure he did his part to get the word out on that in that article on December 3rd, and he's going to be with me 9:40 Eastern to wrap up the show. Very, very positive news, and that is something that needs to be shouted from the rooftops, but you're not going to see it on your local newscast. It's good news. It's good news in thoroughbred racing. It's positive. And we're not going to hear about that in the general news media. You're going to hear about it here this morning, though. If you're wondering, the first Saturday in May at Churchill Downs, now just 140 days, 9 hours, 36 minutes, and 3 seconds away. Saturday, May 1st, the Run for the Roses 2021. And that leads me to my poll question here this morning. When do you start getting Derby fever? You can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know. When do you start getting Derby fever? And I'll give you 4 choices. I've already got it. January 1st, later in the spring, or Derby Week. Those are the 4 choices. When do you start getting Derby fever? I've already got it. Maybe you do. January 1st, after we get past the new year, later in the spring, or, I don't get it until Derby Week. @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, the way that you can weigh in on those poll questions. So reset the show for you. Jason Blewett will kick it off momentarily, 8:15 Eastern. He'll preview the big races at Gulfstream later today. Jim Mulvihill will be here to talk about his article focusing on souped-up racetracks, in particular Keeneland and Breeders' Cup. Was it souped up? We're going to talk to Jim and see what he discovered at 8:35 Eastern time. Our Industry Star of the Week comes your way right around 8:50. Jack Sisterson will be with me at 9 o'clock. Tom Padula, 9:20. Mike Brunker from the Las Vegas Review-Journal at 9:40. It is a very busy show. It kicks off next right here on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince is value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
This is Bob Baffert, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The half was in 48-2 as they round the far turn. Three quarters, 111-4. And it is Silver Freak on the inside. Mashawish is moving now while going wide. Mashawish did not handle the turn all that well, but is coming up to the front runners at the top of the stretch. It is Silver Freak in front. Mosler, Mashawish, Grand Tito running a big one. Lochte is splitting horses too. And then Grand on the far outside, Za Approval. They're coming down to the line, and it's going to be Mashawish to win. Grand Tito was second, then a photo, Fredericksburg, and Za Approval.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Happy to have you with me as well. Larry Colmus with the call. That was the Fort Lauderdale Stakes in 2015. It was the second victory in the race for trainer Todd Pletcher, who will look to add to that resume later this afternoon at Gulfstream Park. Huge day at Gulfstream. You know, every once in a while, too, you get a horse that has a name that can go a lot of different ways. I remember Dullahan. He had a few different ways to pronounce that one. Mishawish. We heard that one several times, but one thing you did hear, you heard him in the winner's circle and crossing the finish line in front quite often. And that race in 2015 for Todd Pletcher, we'll see if he can pull off another one later today. And to tell us more about that is my good friend Jason Blewett, who is the on-air personality and track handicapper at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida. Good morning, Jason. Happy to have you on board, my friend.
Yeah, Mike, great talking to you. Always nice coming on. And, really looking forward to this afternoon's races at Gulfstream. I mean, I don't think I'm being unfair or exaggerating when I say it's the best card down here. I mean, the best single day of racing we've had on this circuit in over 8 months since Tis the Law won the Florida Derby in late March.
Yeah, great point. You have all the greatest stakes action, and you have another stake that's not graded, but it's a – you know, it is a rock-solid program start to finish. An 11-race card. The first post of the afternoon is 12:05 Eastern for people that are going to be playing along at home or wanting to make sure they're tuned in for the opener. But the first stakes race comes up as race number four, the Grade 3 Rampart, 1 mile on the main track. First of all, Jason, before we dive into that race, what's the weather, the track conditions, what's everything look like for this afternoon?
Yeah, it's looking like we'll be fast and firm. I'm just getting ready to head on down. I mean, we're talking at 8:15. I'm going to hang up with you in a few minutes and head on down to Gulfstream today. But it was a nice night, drizzled up by me. My wife and I live about 25 miles north of Gulfstream in Hallandale Beach. Little bit of a drizzle, but I'd really be surprised if we were anything other than fast and firm. The forecast looks good. I mean, you're probably talking a high in the high 70s, right around 80. So just great weather for racing on this December the 12th.
Beautiful day in South Florida. And again, the greatest stakes action begins with the Rampart as race number four, 1:35 Eastern. A field of six was entered in that one. Jason, how did you see it?
I'm taking the favorite and the class of the race, or at least the filly I perceive to be the class of the race, and Latruska, who loves Gulfstream. And just, you know, I was talking to trainer Fausto Gutierrez because she's run some big races. I mean, I would say, you know, the high watermark for her was the Grade 3 Shuvi at Saratoga in late August. And I spoke to her trainer, Fausto Gutierrez, yesterday, and he told me as good as she can be, she's also very fickle. And at times, and you can see, she's a little inconsistent. But I like the notion of just like hitting the reset button with her and laying her up since the Beldame, which I hadn't realized, Mike, that, and I know it was only a four horse field this year, that it had been downgraded to a Grade 2, which I got to tell you, I see that looking at Latruska's PPs, and that is like sacrilege to me how that race isn't a Grade 1. Like, to me, the Beldame at that spot, at that track, that time of year has to be a Grade 1.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It caught me off guard, too, when I pulled up the PPs and started looking, and I guess I just missed it back in October, didn't really pay attention to it being a Grade 2. But, yeah, that is one of those races that when you look at the history and the fillies that have come through that race, the mares that have come through that race, it is it's one of those races that needs to be – it warrants being a Grade 1, in my opinion, anyway.
No, I'm with you on that. That was just a little bit of a sidebar and a little bit of something that got under my skin. You can't that the Beldame's a Grade 1. But anyway, yeah, no, I like Latruska, and I also think she's going to roll. I mean, I think she controls. I mean, that's the trip she wants to pull. The other, you know, key horse, or I'd say most successful horse in the race, is clearly Sally's Curlin for CJ Thoroughbreds and Dale Romans. And, you know, who could forget, that Twitter video of CJ and his buddies watching her win the Grade 3 Hurricane Birdie off track, because Gulfstream was closed to fans at the time last March when she stormed home. I wonder, as good as she's been at times, I wonder, does she get enough speed in this very short field to set up that devastating closing punch of hers?
Yeah, well, we know Latruska has speed. We'll look for her to be up close, if not on the lead, because she has a lot of early gas. And when you're going 1 mile at Gulfstream, Jason, which that's what they're going to do in the Rampart, when you're going 1 mile, it's a one-turn mile race. They come up the backstretch, make that left-hand turn, and then turn for home. Is it an advantage to have speed like that, or would you rather have a horse that can stalk a little bit?
You know, I tend to, you know, as a rule of thumb, I tend just American dirt racing in general, but even getting a little more specific-minded at Gulfstream, I tend to like horses that have early speed. You know, and I guess the good news with her is she has been able to, well, not really. I'm looking at her running lines now. It looks like if she doesn't get the lead, she may not run. So you just got to, Amisale knows her well. And you just got to put her on the lead. And I'm hoping, quite simply, off a layoff, getting back to Gulfstream, which is her home base, and pulling the trip I believe she wants to get in a short field where she can get away from Bajan Girl early and hopefully wire here. I went 5-2-3 with Bajan Girl in second, Sally's Curlin in third. And I guess for this race, to answer your question, I'm all speed. I want the two fillies that I think will be showing the way from the starting gate.
Well, the second of the what, four graded stakes on the program today is the Grade 3 Sugar Swirl. That comes your way as race number six. The ladies also in the spotlight here, but this is a little bit of a different scenario. It is six furlongs on the main track, a field of six entered into the Sugar Swirl. Who wins that one?
I'm going with, and this is a really eclectic race. This is, you know, maybe not the deepest field on today's card, but I think in a lot of ways might be the most fascinating graded stakes we have today. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the three, Golden on Me, who, I mean, when you start to really pull apart, you know, her resume, which, I mean, there's not much to look at. I mean, she's only run the two times, but she's just been untested and has just obliterated the two fields she's been in for trainer Josie Carroll. And then you bounce over to Ladies Island, who won this race a year ago and is your defending winner and has just been another outstanding claim for Rich Averill and the Matisses and Georgina Baxter. You know, she's like the most proven, easily the most successful horse in the race. And then you bounce over to the new Mattaquette, Mike Dove purchased, the PA bred, who got on a good run up at Parks and then was purchased privately by those guys and transferred over to Brad Cox. They're the most important three players and are probably going to be, by a wide margin, the top three betting choices. But what I find fascinating, Mike, they couldn't look any disparate on paper. I mean, you've got three very individual-type horses in the race, and it just makes for a fascinating matchup in the Sugar Swirl.
All right, again, that's race number six, visiting with Jason Blewett live from Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida, previewing the big races coming up later this afternoon in the Sunshine State. Race number eight is a stakes race, but it's the lone non-graded stakes on the program today, the $75,000 My Charmer, mile and a 16th on that turf course, which, as you heard Jason say earlier, should be listed as firm later this afternoon. Who wins the My Charmer, my friend?
In Chad We Trust. I'm all Chad in this race with the five, Lady Lawyer, who's been good, and it seems like Chad hasn't really thrown her, at least in this country, since he got her into the deep end of the pool. And I think overall this is just a good stepping stone for the five, Lady Laura, to step up and try some stakes competition here in South Florida.
The following race is the Grade 3 Harlan's Holiday. It is a Grade 3 with a purse of $100,000. This one back to the main track in a mile and a 16th for the older boys. How'd you see that one?
I'm going with Tatweege. Again, you know, he is far from the most impressive or, you know, traditionally classiest horse in the race when you consider Tax has done some big things and Fat Man was good here last winter for Ken Sweezy and Math Wizard's a grade one winner, in fact, for Sappy Joseph Jr. I think the timing, though, works for Tatweege, who over the summer took him a while to get going, and he was probably, I mean, admittedly, on Todd Pletcher's B or C team based at Gulfstream over the summer months. But, you know, gave this this one-time very pricey colt by Tappet some time to grow and to not have to run against the heavy hitters like he would in a, 12-horse allowance field at Saratoga. And I'm thinking Tatweege may catch horses that, again, have done more running and more important running than him, but he may catch three horses at the right time where he's still very much coming into his own.
All right, that is race number nine. Again, a very solid field set to go to the post in that one. And then race 10, another really strong field. Field of 10 in the Grade 2 Fort Lauderdale, purse of $200,000. Back to the turf course, mile and an eighth. You heard the rejoin of Emshuish winning the race in 2015 for Todd Pletcher. He's won it twice. He'll have a couple of opportunities in today's race to add to that resume. Does he do it, Jason?
I think Todd is obviously super live, having that 1-2 punch of Largent and clearly most importantly the 10 Halliday, who loved it down here and really had his coming out party on this turf course last winter. He's unbeaten in three races on the Gulfstream Park turf. But I did put Halliday second in the spot beneath the number nine Factor This. And coincidentally, it's kind of neat just seeing as a little bit of a side note, you've got Brad Cox's number nine Factor This and Todd's number 10 Halliday, both those horses rematching and dropping out of the Breeders' Cup Mile.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good race. And then you've got the showdown with Chad Brown and Shug McGahee on the racetrack this time, not on social media.
Right. Right. Yeah. A good buddy of mine, you know, I tend to on non-racing days, I tend to try to like limit my exposure to social media and Twitter if I can. So I guess I had missed when it was happening, but a buddy of mine had texted me, you know, last whenever it was Monday or Tuesday and said, hey, did you see, you know, Chad's retort to Shug's, you know, post-race comments with the cigar mile? And, yeah, I guess for me, let's have the horses settle it on the turf course today, Mike. That's a good plan of attack. I like that.
Yeah, we don't see it often in thoroughbred racing. We see it, it's very common in other sports to have athletes come out and take shots at other athletes or coaches or whatever it might be. But to have two trainers or one trainer come out against another on social media doesn't often happen, especially with two trainers of that caliber. It did this past week. It'll be interesting to see how everything plays out on the racetrack in the Fort Lauderdale. Again, that is race 10 in the 11-race program today. 4:40 Eastern is post time for the Fort Lauderdale. And as I told you last week, no post-time drag during the championship meet. So that's welcome news to horse players as well.
It absolutely is. Weather's been great. Do want to, as always, appreciate and thank everybody for following along and playing this circuit, not only during, you know, the marquee winter months, but year-round. I mean, I've been blessed in my career, and I still view myself as just a lucky racing fan. I mean, from New York down to here, I've just really been able to work at two circuits that have amazing fans that are just insanely loyal, and it's been good. I mean, kudos to you know, Aiden Butler and Mike Lakehow and everybody else that, you know, finally said, you know, let's run our races on time. And I was pretty pleased the first couple of days of the meet, just seeing the amount of like positive goodwill on Twitter and on social media. It seemed like most people were really happy with that decision, and it's been great so far.
Well, Jason, I can't thank you enough for taking the time here this morning to walk through all of these races. We'll look forward to seeing you on TV later this afternoon. Good luck, and we'll catch up again soon, my friend. Happy holidays.
All right. Yeah, same to you. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, Mike, and everybody out there, and hope to see everybody at some point, hopefully in 2021, down at Gulfstream Park.
All right, enjoy the day. Jason Blewett from Gulfstream Park here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com, and it is the perfect time to visit EmbraceTheRace.com. If you're still looking to pick up a couple of gifts for the racing fan on your list, trust me, you won't do much better than Embrace the Race. They do a fantastic job. And if you want to say that you are a fan of this sport, that you are somebody who is passionate about the sport as a whole, that this is what you love, this is what you do, and you want quality apparel, that is the place to go, EmbraceTheRace.com. By the way, you can also get more information on those stakes races at Gulfstream and across the country by heading to our website, horseracingradio.net, and checking out the podcast of the Weekend Stakes Preview Show with Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman. That is up there now. It is presented by Naira Betts, and it happens every single Friday, but you can listen to the podcast at your leisure before you play the races across the country later today. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When we come back, we will answer the question, was the racetrack at Keeneland a little on the souped-up side for this year's Breeders' Cup? Jim Mulvihill will join me next to talk about that. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
This man, during his lifetime of nearly 90 years, was synonymous with the thoroughbred racing as best as anybody could portray it. He was born in Fredericksburg, Texas, July 30th, 1880. That was the year the Great Hindu was a two-year-old, and a horse named Fonso won the Kentucky Derby over four rivals to earn $3,800. Our subject ran away from home at the age of 13 to become a jockey. He started as an exercise boy but wore silks in a race at the age of 14. That was long before he became a licensed jockey, although he had ridden at the age of 10 at Wild County Fairs in Texas. He never felt he was a good rider, but he had 1,117 recorded mounts and scored with 123 winners, a few of those against the likes of Immortals, Todd Sloan, and Snapper Garrison. He got too heavy to ride by the time he was 19, and therefore he opted for training to get his license at the age of 20 in 1900. He saddled his first winner in 1902, a horse named Guatama, at New Orleans on March 21st. Between 1902 and 1969, he settled 1,993 winners, including the winners of more than 100 major stakes. His last winner was a four-year-old filly named Heartland, who won Aqueduct's feature by about 8 hours before he died on April 3, 1969. His first stakes winner was Beauclair, who took the Washington Cup at Benning's Racecourse near Washington, D.C. in 1907. He went on to train three Kentucky Derby winners and one Triple Crown winner. The latter was the great Clubfoot Comet Assault in 1946 in the Brown and Cream Silks of the King Ranch. He saddled Bull Venture to win the 1936 Derby at 20-1, and another winner for the King Ranch Middle Ground in 1950. He had a rather unorthodox method of training horses, to say the least. Most trainers would not dare use an apprentice rider in a classic race. This man did it twice, in the Derby, and he won both of them. In 1936, when Ira Hanford on Bull Venture daringly fought through very tight quarters to score by a head over Brevity, and in 1950, when then 16-year-old Bill Bullen kept his mount on the rail to save ground the whole trip. He often said the best horse he had ever trained was Grey Lag, and he went on to say that Grey Lag may have been the singular best he had ever seen. He had bought him as a two-year-old from the Wizard of the Turf, John E. Madden, and raced him until three when Harry Sinclair bought him for $60,000, an unheard-of price at the time. Grey Lag raced for Sinclair and then ran Coca Stable from then on. He was reluctant to use superlatives, but he did feel his best horses besides Grey Lag were Saracen and Assault. His greatest loss was not Grey Lag, it was Stymie, who earned nearly $1 million after being claimed for $1,500. He liked to bet on horses and at one time said, quote, "People who like horses like to bet on them. People who don't bet on them don't belong at the racetrack," end of quote. He was elected to the Racing Hall of Fame in 1959 and was honored by the Thoroughbred Club of America in 1961. Even after a heart attack in 1961, he went on to be leading money-winning trainer in New York. At the age of 87 in 1968, he won 49 races, and that year he trained Gallon Bloom, who was juvenile title holder of that year. He was stoop-shouldered, walked with a bit of a shuffle, with his hand always thrust forward as if something of extraordinary interest was to occur just in front of him. This truly great trainer went shuffling off, so to speak, to the great paddock in the sky, April 3rd, 1969, as an octogenarian at the age of 88. He was the man from Texas, Max Hirsch.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Serengeti Empress chased by Gamine, and here's Gamine striding forward on the upside of Serengeti Empress. Sconson goes third down toward the rail and is still five from the front. Gamine in the final furlong, now at the 16th pole. Gamine, John Velasquez rolling on home to win the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. All Gamine. Be a multiple horse photo for second, third, and fourth. The final time, 1 minute, 20.2 seconds. Track record.
Yeah, track record, track record, track record. That was the theme of the Friday and Saturday races during Breeders' Cup at Keeneland here in Lexington, Kentucky. In total, six track records set over the 2 days, starting with the Nyquist Stakes and highly motivated Rocketry won the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance Stakes. The Perryville went to Nashville. The Filly and Mare Sprint, as you just heard Kurt Becker with the call, Gamine. The Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, Nick's Go, and Authentic capping off a huge year, maybe a Horse of the Year campaign in the Breeders' Cup Classic with yet another track record performance. And that leads us to the question, was that racetrack a bit souped up purposely at Keeneland for the 2 days in an effort to get fast times? That is something we've heard in this sport for decades. It's nothing new, but Jim Mulvihill, longtime turf writer and racing publicist, now a freelance writer, took time to explore that issue in depth earlier this week in an article that you can find on thoroughbredracing.com. And he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jim, good morning, my friend. Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, good morning, Mike. It's great to talk to you.
You know, I loved your approach in putting this article together. You talked with horse players, you talked with horsemen, and you talked with racetrack officials. You left no stone unturned. What did you learn about the 2 days of racing at Keeneland?
Oh, my gosh, quite a bit, and also nothing at all. I did try to talk to as many of the relevant parties as possible. You know, clearly there are a lot of people that are affected by how a track plays. It obviously plays a big part in the outcomes of the races. But yes, you've got gamblers wagering tens of millions of dollars, and there's a lot at stake. So yeah, I tried to talk to as many of them as possible. What did I learn? You know, I have my own feelings on what came out of all of those conversations, as well as the numbers that I was able to look at. The most important thing for me was that I don't think there's anything nefarious going on. You know, I went into it with an open mind. I wanted to explore all the possible options. And yeah, I mean, once you dig into it, you realize that the chances of something being done intentionally in order to doctor the track in a way that influences whether it's the outcome of the race, which I think is even more unlikely, but also the speed of it and the final times. It's hard to put a finger on what the motivation for that kind of behavior might be. So I don't think that there's anything intentionally being done to racetracks to speed them up on big days. The Keeneland surface over the 2 days of the Breeders' Cup was clearly faster than usual. So for folks that were making that observation and were bringing it up, they were entirely within their right. It was plain as day that it was faster than normal, even when taking into account that these were the fastest horses that are going to run there probably ever. But even taking that into account, it was still clearly faster than usual. Something made it play out that way. But I think overall, that's just what happens with racetrack surfaces now and then. They're very hard to maintain and keep consistent day in and day out. It takes a lot of work, and it's part art and part science. And, you know, these guys work really hard at trying to keep it consistent. And, you know, sometimes it can get away from them. I think this was a case where maybe it got away from them a little bit, and that happens. And, you know, that's the result of all of those track record times that we saw. the important thing to me, and I think some of the horse players in the article said the same thing, is that there wasn't a bias. And people have to keep in mind that a fast track does not equal a bias track. There were winners that came from well off the pace. It was a completely fair surface in which every horse of every style had a fair chance to win. So that's probably the most important thing. In the end, the final times don't really matter to most people. You don't get any more purse money for running a second faster.
Yeah, and Bob Elliston, who is the vice president of racing at Keeneland, pointed out that the racetrack, the dirt surface for the Breeders' Cup, was prepped in an exactly identical fashion as they did their entire race meet, which preceded it. It's all predicated on science, Elliston told you. He said that they keep reams of data to evaluate all of it, and then you have to factor in weather and how that plays into it, and horses being able to get a grip on the racetrack, as he pointed out, so that they can move across the track in good fashion. And it was kind of a perfect storm where everything just came together for those 2 days of racing. Do you buy that, Jim, that they did everything exactly the same, didn't try to soup it up? It was just a perfect storm of conditions that led to the faster racetrack.
I do believe them. I mean, especially on the amount of science and effort that goes into it. I know that for certain. I've dealt with Nick Peterson for many years. He's a gentleman that's quoted extensively in the story, who runs the Racing Services Testing Laboratory. And he consults with a lot of racetracks as well as the Breeders' Cup. And I've seen the measurements that Nick and his team do, both at Keeneland and when I was at Churchill Downs. And so I've had a chance to talk to Nick about this several times over the years. And I have no doubts about the integrity of his science as well as the methods by which he collects all this data. So no doubt about that. As far as the weather goes, that is the most important thing when it comes to the maintenance of the track. And, when you look back at the past few Breeders' Cups, you don't see that this is happening year in and year out. So, I think it's more likely that a weather Breeders' Cup week, there was some moisture probably 4 days out, and then it started to get warm, unseasonably warm, as the week went on. And by the time Friday and Saturday came around, you had some moisture in the track that just was, I don't know what the right terminology is, but stuck in there. But there was moisture in the track, and then it got warm and started to dry out, and it was just a very, very fast track. But when you look back at the past few Breeders' Cups, the year prior at Santa Anita, it was unusually slow. And that, I would say, probably was intentional because of all the scrutiny that Santa Anita was under at the time. But then the year before that at Churchill Downs, no track records at all. I think the only horse that came close to that one was City of Light in the third mile. But otherwise, none of the track records at Churchill Downs were threatened at that Breeders' Cup. Then the year before that at Del Mar, nothing that was out of the ordinary. And Del Mar, like Keeneland, doesn't have that many racing days, and yet one of their track records were threatened. So there isn't a pattern with it happening at Breeders' Cup. I think that what people see is they remember it happening maybe a few years before on some big day, and then a few years before that. And over the years, all these big days run together in our minds, and it feels like this happened all the time. But then if you actually list them out and look at the times that it's happened, it might be happening every fourth or fifth big day, or once a year, or twice a year sometimes. But it's not consistently happening on big days to a point where you can say, this is definitely a pattern or a trend. I think it's more of something that happens just often enough to keep it on people's minds.
Talking with longtime racing publicist, now freelance writer, Jim Mulvihill, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That article exploring the six track records. And the fact, or the question, at least trying to answer the question, was the racetrack souped up at Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup, appears on thoroughbredracing.com. You can read it. It's a lengthy article that was really well written. And, Jim, I want to compliment you on that. You really covered all the bases. And one base that you covered, in addition to talking with people like Bob Elliston and some of the horse players and handicappers that we've already discussed, were the horsemen themselves. And Ron Moquette and Tom Amos both quoted in your article, which I thought their takes on the situation and on that particular issue were very telling as well.
Yeah, and I chose those guys very specifically. You know, there were a couple others that I talked to that I didn't get as much out of, but that wasn't a surprise. I mean, Ron and Tom, I think, are both guys that are extremely thoughtful, and they're willing to tell you what's on their mind. And I wanted to speak with them specifically because, you know, the surface was very relevant to what happened with their sources on that day. So Ron, as typical with him, was pretty funny, you know, saying how he's chased fast horses his whole life, and he had been prone to blaming it on the track. And but then when he brings it back and gets serious, he acknowledges that. But he works. He's part of this track maintenance committee at Oakland Park. He's very involved in the surface there, and he's seen up close the attention that's paid to it, both in the maintenance and paying attention to any perceived biases or issues. And Ron just thinks that, you know, we're in a time where safety is paramount, and people are grooming the tracks to get them as safe as possible. And then sometimes you just have really talented horses that can go out and set really fast tractions that are almost hard to believe because we don't see them day in and day out. And those horses can keep going because they're the best in the world and because they're incredibly classy animals. So, you know, Ron's take was much appreciated. And he also talked about far right chasing American Pharoah, which didn't make it into the story, but he used that example as well as how he's experienced it. And you know, when far right lost to American Pharoah in the Rebel, he thought to himself, oh, well, the track was sped up for Baffert. Now come back in the Arkansas Derby and I'm going to beat him if the track's fair. And then he says, well, the rest of the year, nobody got closer to American Pharoah than he did in the Rebel. And he says, you know, sometimes the results over time also confirm for you that it was just your imagination. But Ron was great. And then Tom's a trainer whose take I always respect them pretty much everything. That's probably why he won the Big Four to Tarpon for this year, because he's so insightful and so willing to share those opinions with the media. But he was somebody also who said, you know, maybe this is something that used to happen back in the day, however you want to define back in the day. But these days, there's too much emphasis on safety, too much scrutiny being put onto the racetracks, and he had no issues with the track in Keeneland. You know, his filly got beat by a better horse.
Now, well, good stuff from Jim Mulvihill. Again, that article on thoroughbredracing.com, go back and read it. It's a really good read and a lot of insight. We just kind of hit the highlights for you here this morning. Jim, before I let you go, I've got about 1 minute left here, but I want to bring this up because it was on your Twitter feed. You spent some time in my hometown of Pittsfield, Massachusetts, working with the Pittsfield Dukes, who had a collegiate baseball team there at Wacona Park from 2005 to 2008. I played in Wacona Park many times growing up. It is a wonderful baseball venue, isn't it?
Oh, my God, it's the best. I mean, being at Wacona Park felt like living in another time. And it wasn't just the park itself. It was that community of Pittsfield. And the summer that I worked there, I was the Pittsfield Dukes were in the New England Collegiate Baseball League. And so all of the players were college ball players who in the summertime would live with families in the community, and so there was a lot of pride in that, and the host families would be at every game, and it was just so it was so damn quaint. It just warmed your heart. It's a really special place. It's the only ballpark that takes a sun delay because the sun will be in the batter's eye as it sunsets. So
yep.
Most games incorporate a 15-minute delay to let the sun go down behind the center field fence. It's a really special place, and that's really cool that you got to play there. I have very fond memories of that.
Yeah, it goes further than that. My stepmother, her nephew is Dan Duquette, who, of course, brought the Pittsfield Dukes to Pittsfield and Wacona Park, and so there's that tie,
that
too.
That is who hired me for that summer. I just sent him a blind email to tell him I was moving to the Berkshires, and I had been doing publicity and horse racing, but I didn't know. But I had a summer that I didn't know what I was going to be doing, and he just wrote me back and was like, when you move here, come see me. I'll use you. And he was great.
Yeah, I can remember even going back further than that when it was the Pittsfield Cubs of the Eastern League. It was a Double-A team that used to play there at Wacona Park, and that was in the mid-'80s. And my father had a convenience store in Pittsfield that he owned. And the opposing teams quite often, especially the Nashua Pirates from Nashua, New Hampshire, would stay at a hotel right across the street from the store. So they would come in and get sandwiches and all those types of things while they were in town. And I got to know many of them. And they would have me out there to play catch with them before the games and all that kind of stuff.
My God.
So fond memories of Wacona Park.
Wow. Any of those guys go on to play in the pros or any names?
They did. I actually stayed in touch with one of them, a guy named Scott Bales, who went on and got drafted by the Cleveland Indians and played with them for a while. He was a pitcher. who's the other? I think he was a second baseman. Bip Roberts was his name. Another name that comes to mind. I think he made it. Yeah, I think he made it to the big leagues, too.
I love it. Well, my fantasy is to someday retire to the Berkshires so that I can drive to Saratoga in the summertime and go see baseball games at Wacona Park if there's still baseball games being played there then, and visit museums in Williamstown. And that's my plan for, like, 20 years from now.
Yep, fantastic stuff. All right, buddy, I'm going to let you go. Jim Mulvihill here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Always appreciate the visit. Good to catch up, and happy holidays.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Still to come, you're going to hear from trainer Jack Sisterson. That's at 9 Eastern. Tom Padula going to be with me at 9:20. And Mike Brunker, the assistant editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, we'll wrap up the show at 9:40. But when I come back, it's your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Introducing racing's newest partnership experience, the Horse and Julep Racing Club. Come see what makes us so different. The inaugural partnership club is forming right now and will purchase yearlings at the Keeneland January sale under the eye of rising star agent Phil Hager. The horses will go to historic Darby Dan Farm, whose land has raised no fewer than 6 Kentucky Derby winners. Partners should plan for a meetup there to visit the farm, the horses, and the best of the bluegrass. Visit horseandjulep.club today to reserve your spot. Horseandjulep.club.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
McKenzie, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKenzie was named a TDN Rising Star following his 5-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning 2-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKenzie scored 4 Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKenzie is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKenzie. McKenzie holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKenzie is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKenzie, they've done it. McKenzie has it by 2.
Coming to the final furlong, McKenzie's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKenzie comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKenzie has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures. Earnings over $3.4 million. McKenzie standing at Gainesway.
I may never have met you. We don't go way back. Maybe we wouldn't even be friends if we did. But when you wear a mask, you have my respect. Because your mask doesn't protect you. It protects me. I wear my mask to protect you. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The new leader is True Timber as the field heads for home. Three quarters went in 1:11. It's True Timber in front by almost three lengths. Then Snapper Sinclair, Performer, is out in the middle of the track as they pass the eighth pole. It's True Timber now in front by almost five. True Timber is going to pull off the upset here in the Grade 1 Cigar Mile. True Timber by 5.5 lengths. Then Snapper Sinclair and Performer and the mile in 1:36.25.
John Embriel with the call of the Grade 1 Cigar Mile last Saturday at Aqueduct. True Timber scoring for trainer Jack Sisterson, who is going to be with me in just about 6 or 7 minutes from right now. He was ridden by Kendrick Carmouche, who wrapped up what is a phenomenal meet for him, being a leading rider in New York and then, of course, winning that Grade 1 race. And because of that, I thought it would be appropriate to make Kendrick our Industry Star of the Week. This segment brought to you every week by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. Well, Kendrick took time to visit with Anthony Stabile on our Race Day program earlier this week, and he started by talking about where his journey actually began.
Been 20 years of it. You know, I traveled the country. My dad and mom, I come from Louisiana, Vinton, Louisiana, representing in the house, you know. And, you know, I just followed my dad. You know, my dad got me started as a young boy and just rode horses around the areas of our country yards. And, you know, my dad got me on a couple race horses. And after that, that was all she rode. You know, by the time I turned 16, I was ready to rock and roll. I galloped a lot of horses, rode a lot of quarter horses whenever I was a kid on the racetrack and just learned all kind of things. And, you know, my dad and mom really just, you know, kept me into the game and just kept me focused at the beginning of my career where I could have matured throughout my life to be who I am today. And, you know, I met my wife in Philadelphia. You know, we have two beautiful kids. I mean, my in-laws, they wonderful people. I had a best friend named Jeff and Philadelphia Ratner, and you know, I had a lot of good people. Curtis Harton, that was in Belmont, he was one of my best friends that kept me pushing and fighting. And you know, it's a lot of people that I can just keep going on and on, but you know, I don't want to forget anybody. I just want, you know, let them know that, you know, we got there this last couple of weeks, but we, you know, my fans and everybody, but we have to keep fighting. You know, it's never an end to success. Everybody once you taste it, you want more of it.
What did you think going into the cigar on Saturday?
Well, with the weather forecast showing that it was raining, you know, I just thought that, you know, my horse would get over this racetrack pretty good. He liked the slop, got a couple good scratches out of the race, and you know, we got Mr. Bluff that goes into it where he's gonna be 1-2, and King Galamo, he was coming off the bench that he would be fresh enough coming from Gulfstream Park. And, you know, I thought I could have sit the trip and, you know, my horse warmed up good. He was very happy in the post parade, and he broke sharp and put me in a good spot, and I just rode him home from there.
So you pull the trigger, you open up turning for home, performer's not running. Quite frankly, nobody's running. What starts going through your mind at the eighth pole?
I'm winning this race, man. I just know I'm you know, I lost a stake race early in the day by a head. Jose Ortiz and beat me early in the day. I just wanted to come back and win another race, and I end up winning a stake race. And, you know, I make my agent laugh all the time. He always asks me, man, did you see that you win a stake race at the beginning? You know, like a big stake race? Nah, I don't even know. I know I win a stake race, though. I never knew it was the Cigar Mile and my grade one all in one day. I mean, it was just unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
So you come back, and I think a lot of people were split on this. You legitimately did not know, because you asked the groom, was this a grade one? You legitimately didn't know.
No, I don't. I don't never look at the top of the page whenever I study my program, because I feel like, you know, you can't win it until you get it. Then you can get it. Then you can look at it, you know. But, oh, man, it was just unbelievable. when it finally sinked in, it just, like, I was just speechless. I was very speechless about the whole situation that just occurred.
This has been the wildest year. I think I could speak for everybody pretty confidently. It's just been the wildest year, not only in racing, but, in life and,
in the world.
In the world, and with everything that's gone on, you've been outspoken about a lot of this stuff. You know, as an African-American rider, you kind of took the bull by the horns and you put out some videos, you know, real compelling and passionate stuff about what's going on. That had to add to this experience, I would think.
I mean, it just made me fight harder, Anthony. It made me... I had a slow year after the pandemic. I had a real good year before the pandemic, doing good. And, you know, everything slowed up for everybody, not just myself. And, you know, with everything that's happening and, you know, things going a little slow for me at the Belmont and Saratoga meet, you know, I figured leaving Saratoga, man, I just started thinking to myself, I got to start changing stuff. I got to get a little bit hungrier. You know, I put everything in one basket and just made me fight harder. And just, you know, I just want to show everybody that, you know, it doesn't matter what color you are or what racially you are. You just got to work hard. You really do just have to work hard and persevere and keep your head in the game. I mean, everybody dreams can come true if you keep fighting for them. And, you know, and in the last 4.5-5 weeks of my career, man, I tell you what, man, it's been so amazing to win my first grade one and winning the fall title. I mean, just so many people that fought with me to get to this point.
That's Kendrick Carmouche, our industry star of the week. That interview brought to you by Stuart Morris. And yeah, he is somebody who has worked his tail off and fought and continued to fight and battled through injuries, and now enjoying what might be the best time period of his entire career, as you heard him allude to at the end of that interview. Fantastic stuff from Kendrick. My thanks to him and to the Big A, Anthony Stabile, for providing us with that interview earlier this week. All right, second half of the show kicks off with Jack Sisterson, the trainer of True Timber in the Cigar Mile. We'll talk to Jack about that and maybe preview a couple of his horses coming up later today. Tom Padula at 9:20, Mike Brunker at 9:40. That's all ahead right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Improbable, then global campaign, Tacitus, 'tis the law, all behind Authentic, who strides away in the Keeneland sunset for John Velasquez. Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
'Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, 'Tis the Law, and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Tardnawa is running fast down the center of the course. Tardnawa past Magical has caught Channel Maker. Tardnawa moves on by Tardnawa and Colin Keane to win the Longines Turf. Order of Australia looking for a huge upset here. Order of Australia gets that upset at 73-1 for Pierre Charles Boudot, who's having quite a Breeders' Cup.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, rolling on, busy Saturday morning. Happy to have you back with me, Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program or any of this show, really any of our talk shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our programs at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, another way that you can access the program. And, oh, by the way, on the Horse Races Now app, if you have that app downloaded, just click on the playback button there and you'll be able to listen to all of our podcasts there as well. Poll question today. With the Kentucky Derby edging ever closer, now just 140 days, 8 hours, 39 minutes, and 17 seconds away. Yeah, that first Saturday in May is going to be here before you know it. The poll question, when do you start to get Derby fever? And you have four choices. Already got it? Maybe you do. January 1st, later in the spring, or Derby week? Those are the four choices right now. Later in the spring is the leader in the clubhouse, but 21% of you said that you already have Derby fever, so good luck getting over that because it's only going to get worse over the course of the next 140 days. Well, it's been one heck of a 2020 for trainer Jack Sisterson, probably better than most. He saddled his second Grade 1 winner of the year when True Timber crossed the finish line first in last Saturday's Cigar Mile at Aqueduct, and Jack is with me now on this Saturday morning. Jack, appreciate the visit, my friend. Good morning.
Oh, no, thanks a lot for having me, Mike. It's a pleasure.
Congrats on the big win last week. Take me back to last Saturday and tell me all about it.
Oh, do you know, Mike, I'll probably bore everyone to death, but I've got a lot of people to thank for giving me this sport and allowing me to compete in a race like that. You know, I've got great staff, great owners, great ride by Kendrick, and Keen McGoughlin, I got to thank for sending the horse in such great shape to me. And this was a scenario of just keeping a fast horse happy, and I would only get in his way if I started to do what Keane didn't do to him. It was all credit to Keane. He sent the horse in great shape. It was just a perfect example of keeping a horse happy and moving forward with him.
You had some big scratches out of that race, in particular Firenze Fire, who was expected to be one of the horses to beat, Mind Control, Majestic Dunhill, the other scratches. But it might not have mattered. With the way that True Timber performed, sat that stalking trip, drew off to win by 5.5 lengths. It may not have mattered who was in that race. It didn't look like he was going to get beat last Saturday.
You know, we were optimistic, Mike, shipping him up there. We flew him up midweek to Tom Morley, and thanks to Tom Morley for taking care of the two horses that we had. Due to the pandemic, we couldn't ship any stuff, so we had to ship to a good friend of mine and great trainer, Tom. And he trained very forwardly out of his second in the Lafayette. We did think he would win the Lafayette as a prep for that race. Unfortunately, he couldn't get in the Breeders' Cup Mile, but I think it all worked out, you know, in True Timber's favour, not running in the Breeders' Cup Mile, because I don't think he would have been quick enough to keep up with Go Next Go on that day. But we ran a good second in the Lafayette as a prep. And you really diagnose his form, Mike, and he's a horse that loves Aqueduct. He loves that one-turn mile configuration. You go back to his numbers. He really made sense in that race to us, and even more so after his training. So we're optimistic shipping up. You know, a lot of people question if he was good enough on us. We had all the faith in the world that if he put his best foot forward, he was good enough. And, you know, he showed everyone with his effort there on Saturday.
How does it work, Jack, when you get a horse in your barn that maybe comes from another outfit like this, or, you know, you're just seeing them for the first time? What are some of the things that, A, that you look for in them, and then B, that you try to accomplish with them as you start to incorporate them into your program?
Well, I think, you know, it's, again, you look back on Saturday and you win a race like that, and, you know, unfortunately, all the recognition's put on me, and it's not me. It's all the hard work and effort my staff to put in 24/7 to go unrecognizable on the big race like that. The spotlight goes on me, and I'd like to change that. But in the meantime, I can't. So to answer your question, what do you look for? I think you got to give credit to Kieran McGotton in this case for sending me True Timber in great shape. I simply just had to stay out of True Timber's way. You know, keeping that horse happy. We did not have to change anything with him. You know, I was familiar with True Timber. He ran in big races. I followed him. He's a horse that, you know, ran creditable in big races, so he was an easy horse to root for. When I got him, I pulled his form, and he came in great shape, and I'd only got in True Timber's way if I started to change things that him and True Timber and Kieran had done, and, you know, they had great success in the Cigar Mile previously. Unfortunately, they couldn't win it, but it was always a year-end goal because he ran so well with Kieran to send him back to last weekend.
Visiting with trainer Jack Sisterson here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fresh off that big win with True Timber in last Saturday's Grade 1 Cigar Mile. His second Grade 1 of 2020 to go along with Vexatious, who gave him his first Grade 1 of his career back at Saratoga this year in the Personal Ensign. We visited after that race as well, Jack, and it's always a delight to catch up. But, you know, there's a saying, and I referenced this earlier in the program, that good things happen to good people. And I am so happy for your success this year because you were one of the first people to support a fund that was set up called REIN, R-E-I-N, and it was set up earlier this year to assist members of the racing community that have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Tell me more about your involvement there.
Yeah, that was a tiny little thing that I could do, you know, during this tough times for everyone, and just been able to donate just a small amount to go to a better cause. And again, during that time, there was a lot of trainers and a lot of other people that came on board as well that sort of went unrecognizable that I had to thank them as well. And again, that's the least that we can do. There's a lot. I think everybody knows it's been a tough 2020 for everyone. I think it went to show how incredible this industry can be if people stick together and help each other out.
What's been the key this year, Jack? I mean, I mentioned the two grade ones, the first two grade one victories of your training career. You'd won grade threes prior to that, but this is a whole nother level here in 2020. What's been the key?
Keeping fast horse happy, mate. At the end of the day, you got to get them in a happy frame of mind to move forward. And you know, I grew up playing soccer in an athletic sort of environment, and you know, the coaches always said, you know, to move forward, you got to, you know, get your mind in a good state of mind to move forward and compete at the highest level. And you know, that's sort of the approach that we get. You know, we allow the horses to put their feet where they want to put their feet, get them in a happy frame of mind to move forward with. And you know, I think if you ask any trainer, you know, what's the hardest part about it, they'll say getting good horses in the barn. And once you get the good horses in the barn, you know, I think 90% of that is, that's the hardest part. And fortunately for the support that I've had, I've been sent good horses, and it's just keeping those fast horses happy.
Well, you get another good horse in the barn, another horse coming from another trainer, previously trained by Todd Pletcher, that's Channel Cat, who goes this afternoon in the Fort Lauderdale Stakes at Gulfstream Park. A horse that's won 5 of 22 lifetime starts. You'll saddle him for the first time. Tell me about Channel Cat and look ahead to that Fort Lauderdale.
We're excited to see him run this afternoon, Mike, off a long layoff. He's trained very forwardly. If you sort of go diagnose his work tab, you know, I put him on a 6-day work schedule because we were going to point him for the River City at Churchill, but due to the turf course, we had to sort of reroute. And he knows his job. And I just, again, stayed out of his way. He took every 6 days we worked him, he took that very well within himself. And we were looking forward to getting down here to Palmetto to start breezing on the grass. He's had 2 5-8 breezes, one in company. Last weekend he went to solo 5-8, and he's done those works very professionally, finished the works very strong, and we're excited to see him run because I think the race has got quite a bit of speed in there. And you know, got a great jockey in Corey Lannery and sort of take back, save ground, and make one run with him.
Doesn't hurt when you get a horse into the barn that's almost a millionaire too, huh?
I know, I might have to ask if I can borrow some money on the way there to go see this afternoon.
Yeah, Channel Cat under Corey Lannery for Jack Sisterson later today in that Fort Lauderdale. You know, you look at his form. He hasn't won since the Bowling Green at Saratoga in July of 2019. He's 0 for 6 cents, but he's knocked on the door against some really tough competition. What things can Jack Sisterson do to try to get him over that hump and back to the winner's circle?
You know, it goes back to True Timber. He hadn't won since 2018, but he still showed up every day in his training and in his races. He still showed that will. And Channel Cat has shown the same will that, you know, I'd only assume that Todd saw in his training and in his efforts in the afternoons. He's, you know, from an appetite standpoint, he hasn't missed a beat. He's energetic. He's bright, alert. And from an older horse, you might think, you know, as they years go on, they slow down, and he's shown us that he's not slowing down any, but this afternoon will be a great gauge on where he sort of stands in his career and moving forward.
Well, good luck in the Fort Lauderdale and with all the horses moving forward, Jack. Before I let you go, I mentioned that Kentucky Derby edging ever closer, 140 days away, and you heard me mention the poll question asking our listeners, when do you start to get Derby fever? Already got it, January 1st, later in the spring, or Derby week? When does Jack Sisterson start to get Derby fever?
Well, I think I've got hay fever at the minute, Mike. I keep sneezing in the barn down here at Palmetto. So I think in this sport, you have a 24-7. That's what you're in it for, big races like that. And you wake up at 3 o'clock every morning, 7 days a week for that dream. So for me, it's an ongoing thing.
Jack, appreciate the visit, my friend. Happy holidays, and go get it done later today in the Fort Lauderdale.
And you, Mike, best of luck, and Merry Christmas to you. And if we can help with anything, you let me know.
All right, great stuff. Appreciate it, Jack. Jack Sisterson here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. And again, if you're looking for the perfect gift for the horse racing fan on your list, head over there right now, EmbraceTheRace.com, and I promise you will not be disappointed. They do a fantastic job, and it is quality, quality, quality. I've got about a minute left before I have to get to this next commercial break, which gives me an opportunity to remind you that our friends at Tony's of Lexington will be allowed to welcome guests back to the restaurant starting on Monday. So they will open their doors about 50% capacity. And if you have not been to Tony's of Lexington, you are really missing out. They are on Main Street, kind of just down in behind Rupp Arena. Go see them. Make your reservation now. They're taking reservations for next week. And stop in and see them. I actually got takeout from Tony's last night. My wife, Michelle, it was my mother's birthday. We got four amazing dinners and brought them to the house. And they were just off the charts good. But you know, you can get takeout or you can go see them next week as they will open their doors again, which is welcome news to all the restaurants here in Lexington and throughout the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And one other note for another local sponsor, that's our friend Bob Cleveland and the team over at Woodford Feed. If you are getting ready for the winter season, which I know many of you are at the farms, head over and see them. They have worked their tails off through this entire pandemic. I've been by there many, many times, and you can't do any better than the folks at Woodford Feed. They'll take care of any of the needs that you have, including if you want some Carhartt clothing, they have that. They're an official Carhartt dealer. Steel, you want a chainsaw, whatever it is, head over there and see the folks at Woodford Feed here in Versailles too. They're fantastic people. All right, going to get to another break. Come back with Tom Padula talking about his visits with Nick Zito and Hall of Fame basketball coach Rick Pitino. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
This proven son of Giants Causeway has sired four millionaires, including Claiborne Farm stallion Lee. Recent top runners include Plum Ali, winner of the $500,000 Mint Juvenile Filly Stakes. Sharp Samurai, a graded stakes winner and runner-up in the Grade 1 Pacific Classic. International graded stakes winners Birdie Queen and Shabal Nibras. Plus these standout performers. In the ring, his yearlings sold up to $260,000. First Samurai, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Introducing racing's newest partnership experience, the Horse and Julep Racing Club. Come see what makes us so different. The inaugural partnership club is forming right now and will purchase yearlings at the Keeneland January sale under the eye of rising star agent Phil Hager. The horses will go to historic Darby Dan Farm, whose land has raised no fewer than six Kentucky Derby winners. Partners should plan for a meetup there to visit the farm, the horses, and the best of the bluegrass. Visit horseandjulep.club today to reserve your spot. Horseandjulep.club.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Strike the gold on the outside with Chris Adley taking command. Along the inside, Best Pal into the second spot. Main Minister is third, coming 70 yards to the finish and far away from the rail. Strike the gold wins the Derby by a length and a half. Under the wire, second was Best Pal. Then it was a photograph between the long shot Main Minister and from far back, Green Alligator was in the photo for the show spot. And the time on the board, a slow Derby, 2 minutes and 3 seconds, but Strike the Gold strikes the roses this afternoon.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on the Equine Forum. That was Dave Johnson with the call of the 1991 Run for the Roses. Hard to believe it was long ago, but it was. Strike the Gold, giving Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito his very first Kentucky Derby win. It was a moment that I know the Hall of Famer will never forget. I was a huge Strike the Gold fan, so I'm never going to forget it. And I know that my next guest, Tom Padula, will not forget it either. Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And Tom, of course, a longtime turf writer for USA Today. He worked in New York with the New York Times. He now has an article out there on America's Best Racing. You can go to americasbestracing.net to read it. It's called Nick Zito, a Humble Hall of Famer. And I have to tell you, Tom, he is one of my favorite people in the business. So when I read your piece, I had to invite you on the program to talk about sitting down with Nick Zito. If people have the chance to do it, it is one of the greatest experiences that you could ever have. I promise you that.
Yeah, no, I feel the exact same way. I was charmed by him the first time I met him. We just had an instant connection, and he's just one of the tremendous people in racing.
Yeah, fantastic. When you sat down with him, first of all, when did you get the opportunity to sit down and visit with him to put this piece together?
It actually was a while ago. You know, things don't always run as soon as we do the interview. So it was some time ago. But, you know, he was just terrific, very accommodating. And, you know, let's be honest, he has fallen on some hard times. It kind of pains me to see his statistics these days. And you do kind of wonder why. You know, he was just terrific in answering the various questions. And, you know, he's always said it's a humbling game. And he has been humbled by it in recent years.
How is he dealing with the somewhat downturn in his business right now?
I mean, I think it's definitely painful. There's no doubt about it. And let's face it, it coincided with the loss of Robert LaPenta, a really a powerful owner. And they had formed a dynamic combination. And, you know, as you know, it's hard to keep clicking through the years. They did click for many years. But Mr. LaPenta felt the need to take some different directions. As you know, he had a wonderful triumph with Whitmore in the sprint, and he's had success with other trainers. But for whatever reason, the combination with Nick had stopped working, and that's just a shame.
It is, and, you know, when you think about trainers like a Nick Zito or a Dwayne Lucas who were so prominent in this sport year in and year out, and then to see them not win as often now, but they still get up, they still go to the barn every morning, they still spend the same amount of time. It's not like Nick Zito all of a sudden forgot how to train a racehorse. He's still doing things the same way, but for whatever reason, he's not getting the same caliber of horses, or they're just not running the way you would expect them to. They don't just forget how to train, though, Tom, do they?
They don't, but I think that it is very challenging for older trainers to recruit moneyed young owners. You know, I think the perception might be that as you get a bit older, maybe you're not as hard driving as you once were. Even if that's not the case, I think there can be that image that is very hard to work against. Barkley Tagg, for instance, is adamant with reporters, please, you know, do not keep hammering my age. You know, he so much wants to be in the business and he wants to be successful, and it's a big concern of his. You know, he's in his 80s, and he just worries that every time that gets reported, it might hurt his business. So it's a real issue. And I would argue it's not the only profession where it's an issue. We'd like to think ageism doesn't exist, but I would kind of argue that it does.
Well, Nick's a guy who started from the bottom up, walking hots, and then, you know, eventually grew into a Hall of Fame trainer that we know today. One thing that nobody will ever be able to take away from Nick Zito is those two Kentucky Derby victories in 91 with Strike the Gold, and then years later with Gopher Gin. And I loved his... your question to him when or the story he told you, Tom, when he said he had a gentleman come up to him and say, did you ever win the Kentucky Derby? And Zito replied twice, and
yeah.
He said the guy almost fell down. He couldn't believe it.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Derby triumphs are clearly what Nick holds dearest. There's no doubt about that. And understandably so. I mean, it's just so special. And, you know, that is what drives everyone, let's face it. And it's never enough. For Bob Baffert, it's never enough. And I'm sure Nick Zito hopes there's somehow a third one in him.
Well, that's a great point. And the way that you ended the article, which, by the way, again, you can read it at americasbestracing.net. The way you ended the article, you ended it with Nick's quote where he said, I think you need to go out on top. You need to go out your own way. How do you think Nick Zito wraps things up and goes out? Where does he want to be?
Well, I mean, as I say, I know he would love to win another Derby. You know, I mean, I think he's eager to show people that he still has the it factor, as elusive as that is to explain, you know, that it is there for him. And it's just so challenging because, as we know, you're only as good as the talent in the barn. And Bob Baffert can't make a slow horse run. We are, to some degree, trainers are at the mercy of nature. Is it a fast horse or not? I'm actually working on a profile on Zippy Chippy, and there was nothing that was going to make Zippy Chippy run fast. And on certain days, he wasn't going to run at all.
Yeah, so true. By the way, visiting with Tom Padula here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and that fantastic piece on Nick Zito, his visit with Nick, and some of the comments that Nick had and the way he looks at his career now, just fantastic. So make sure you do yourself a favor and go back and read that. You know, it's a lot like what you just referred to, Tom. It's a lot like a college basketball coach, for example, who – you're not going to win the national title with a team that is not talented. But if you have a bunch of talented players, you know, no matter how good of a coach you are, you're not going to win it without talent. But if you have talented players, you can, even a coach that's not that good, can get by and win some games. You had a chance to sit down, or you're working on it now, to put together a story on Hall of Fame basketball coach Rick Pitino, who people here in the Bluegrass will be very familiar with, but he's a guy that loves horse racing, and you're talking with him now to put together that piece. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, no, it's a sort of a fascinating situation. You've got a Hall of Fame coach, arguably one of the best college basketball coaches in history, winding down his career at, of all places, Iona College, which is a mid-major Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference. It is the former home of Jim Valvano. They have had success over the years, but certainly not at the national level. And it's going to be fascinating to see how high Rick can take them, and just whether this marriage can work. You know, he referred to the little campus and little Iona College, and I think he's starting to see just how small a setting he's in and how different a setting he's in. Having said that, he's still indulging his passion, which is to coach basketball. Few can match him in that passion. And he's working really hard, and there are signs that he's already getting dramatic results. He recruited, the next recruiting class is four players, but they're all filled with promise. He's already been able to recruit internationally in the name of Iona using Zoom to do it, and that's rather remarkable. So it's really a fascinating story on many levels. I'm enjoying reporting it, and of course, he's a controversial figure. There's no way around that. And I think Iona fans are going to have to put their arms around, can they embrace him or not, given the past.
Well, they got a big win last night, 70-42 over the Fairfield Stags. So Iona now 2-2 on the season. And by the way, that's a better record than the University of Kentucky, if you want to look at it in that fashion.
Yes, there you go. Yep, absolutely.
A little different competition.
I mean, people at Iona are excited.
Yeah, and they should be. Did you get an opportunity to talk with Rick about his involvement with racing and his passion for thoroughbred racing at all?
Unfortunately, I just could not. The time with him is so limited. I wish I had. I mean, but we sure know the passion is there. I remember a few years ago I wrote about Coach Rocks and Coach Pitino's unwillingness to come to the Oaks, because he was still steaming over the Louisville situation and just did not even want to be in the state. And that was unfortunate, because how many times do you get an Oaks horse? So he's certainly an emotional guy, and, you know, again, a controversial figure. And I know the passions run high in Kentucky. I found that out in a hurry writing about Coach Rocks.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, it, certainly that's the case here in the Bluegrass, the Commonwealth. Passions run high when you talk about UK basketball, U of L basketball. I've often referred to it as a religion here in the Commonwealth, and part of the fabric of what people grow up with here in the state. Nick Zito and Rick Pitino also had a very successful relationship for many, many years, didn't they?
Yes, yes, yep, absolutely. Actually, the way Pitino came to Iona was through horse racing, because he and Robert LaPenta owned horses together. And that was around the year 2000. And they developed a friendship from there. And Iona's coach, Iona had a very successful coach, Tim Clues, who unfortunately fell ill. And when it became clear that Iona would have to hire a new basketball coach, the new college president there, Dr. Seamus Carey, called Mr. LaPenta and said, I know this sounds crazy, but what about trying to hire Rick Pitino as our next coach? And it was LaPenta, based on their horse racing relationship, who reached out to Pitino in Greece to find that Pitino was really receptive to the idea. And they made it happen.
Oh, what a fantastic story. Horse racing ties abound when it comes to Rick Pitino, when it comes to Iona now, and when it comes to, of course, Nick Zito, as they had that great relationship. I was trying to think of the name of the horse that they had that was the Grade 1 winner, and I just looked it up. It was A.P. Valentine, who was owned by Rick Pitino, trained by Nick Zito, won the Grade 1 Champagne, and that was a horse that was really, really good. They had a lot of luck with that horse.
Yes, yes, yep. No, I mean, Pitino has done fairly well in racing. You know, I think he, just as with the recruiting, he knows who to tap.
Yep, yep, absolutely. Tom Padula here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, again, a delight to catch up. It's always fun to have you on the program. Really appreciate the visit and continued success with all of these articles. We'll look for that Rick Pitino story, and we'll encourage people to head back to America's Best Racing to check out the Nick Zito piece as well. Well done.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Mike. Sure appreciate it.
All right, happy holidays. Tom Padula here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, somebody who has had an illustrious career when it comes to covering racing and other stories. He wrote for the New York Times, the L.A. Times. He had other publications, major publications that he wrote for, and then spent 18 years with USA Today and has covered racing and the Triple Crown every year since 1998. So well done, Tom Padula. Keep up the great work. And that interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by going to embracetherace.com. All right, when I come back, I'm going to visit with Mike Brunker, who is the assistant editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Going to talk about one of the true positive stories of 2020 in racing that got nearly zero publicity. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6, who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old, and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home! Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War! Will Take Charge, a final man! Mucho Macho Man!
Mucho Macho Man has produced two first crop Grade 1 winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred Mucho Unusual all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adina Springs.
Championship Meet is back at Gulfstream Park now through March 28th with live racing Wednesday through Sunday. Thoroughbred stakes action continues with Fort Lauderdale December 12th, the Grade 1 $3 million Pegasus World Cup on January 23rd, the Grade 3 Holy Bull January 30th, and much more. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with the First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. On-site viewing is still closed to the public, but you can watch the racing action and get more information at GulfstreamPark.com.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As they make their way to the top of the stretch, Juliet Foxtrot turns for home in front. Blowout confronts her once again on the outside. Sharing is third. Tamahir continues to close on the far outside. Maxim Wraith running a big one, and there too is Viadera in the mix. Viadera is closing in. Here comes Viadera after Blowout.
Blowout Veadera. It's going to be desperately close. Blowout and Veadera, the stablemates on the wire together of the matriarch. And then it was Sheringan Juliet Foxtrot.
One of the highlights of the Bing Crosby meet just concluded at Del Mar. The Grade 1 Matriarch going to Veadera, the British bred. That was on November 29th. Larry Colmus had the call, and it wrapped up a fantastic meet at Del Mar, at least from a handle perspective, certainly, but from a safety perspective as well. The racing at Del Mar, just fantastic and safe for all involved. The same thing goes for Santa Anita, and if you're hearing that for the first time, that is a shame, because the negative publicity that Santa Anita received because of all of the horse fatalities over the course of the past couple of years paled in comparison, or at least the positive publicity now pales in comparison to what they got with the negative publicity. And nobody knows that better than Mike Brunker, who is the assistant editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, appreciate the visit. Good morning.
Morning, Mike.
Well, thank you, first of all, for bringing this to light, because this is a topic that did not get any national attention. You have an article in the Las Vegas Review-Journal that was published on December 3rd called Safe Racing at Del Mar and Santa Anita Goes Nearly Unnoticed. Unbelievable, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. I mean, since I've worked in the news business for many years now, I know how it works. If it bleeds, it leads kind of philosophy. So TV in particular, when they can get their images of protesters or some horrible breakdown on the track, it gets their attention at the news meeting. So I think that's kind of part of the equation. But the other part of it is, groups like PETA and some of these other more radical animal rights groups have really been successful in demonizing the sport and, just making people believe that it's totally corrupt, people don't care about the horses and things like that. And so, that seems to be resonating with the public, and I think, news outlets kind of sense that one based on the emails and letters they get after the AR segment.
I threw some numbers out earlier in the program. I'll do it again while I have you here, Mike. Santa Anita concluded the autumn meet as the safest racetrack in the nation. During the time period after Del Mar closed on September 5th, there were 1,106 horses racing over the dirt track and the turf course at Santa Anita. Additionally, horses recorded over 51,200 training sessions, including 3,771 timed workouts over the main track and 487 over the training track, and not a single fatality. That is the type of thing that, as a sport, we need to do a better job of getting the word out to the mainstream media.
Absolutely. I mean, those are phenomenal numbers. I myself really probably didn't believe in my heart of hearts that was achievable. The fact that Santa Anita took it very seriously when they had protesters outside the gate every day and, got the governor expressing concern and lots of calls for it to be shut down forever. So they did react proactively, and they got some new scanning equipment. So they're looking at these horses very carefully before they race. They've got a number more veterinarians on staff who do every horse gets examined on, I believe it's on race day, maybe a day out as well, but they get a good thorough going over. So they're catching most of these problems that led to the breakdowns before they happen. And it's really encouraging. On the other hand, for small tracks, it's going to be a considerable investment to pull this off. But maybe there's a way circuits could cooperate and purchase some of this equipment and share it.
Yeah, it's a great point. And that was going to be my next question. Are there things that other racetracks can take away from what's been done in California now from a safety perspective and incorporate those into their tracks at other venues across the country? Do you see that happening, Mike?
I hope it does. I mean, it's they've really put down the blueprint here for a way to clean up the whole fatality part of the sport, which is something that PETA just feasts on. So I think, you know, it's in the track's best interest to take this seriously and take as many of the measures as they can. But, you know, I think the cooperation thing is going to be the way to go if some of these small tracks are going to be able to participate, because, you know, it's not something they can necessarily afford to do on their own.
I'm sure that you could have covered any number of storylines, but you chose to tackle this one and make sure that you got the word out about how well things went at Del Mar and Santa Anita. Why, Mike, did you feel compelled to write this article and get this news out there?
Well, I kind of feel like everybody who's a fan of the sport or involved in the sport has some responsibility to kind of push back on this storyline that's gained so much credence in that, you know, horses are dying right and left, they're drugged to the eyeballs, and you know, just some of the myths that PETA and other groups perpetuate. So I think, you know, as I happen to have a little bit of a podium here at the paper, and I just felt it was a great topic since it did go virtually ignored in the Southern California media.
Yeah, and the national media as well. And, you know, that was the surprising part to me, considering all of the attention that organizations like NBC and CNN and Headline News and all these different national news outlets, all the attention that they gave the fatalities that were taking place, the fact that you didn't get a follow-up here and say, hey, remember that story we brought you last year with all the fatalities? Well, guess what? There was not a single fatality, and here's the numbers, and what a job they have done. But as you said at the top of the interview, if it bleeds, it leads, and quite often it's disappointing that we don't get the flip side of the story out there, but it was not out there at all as far as I know.
Not really. I mean, it was, you know, some of the industry publications covered it. I know the Pollock Report did. I believe Blood Horse, you know, yeah. those publications did. But I did not see it anywhere else in any of the mainstream media. And, you know, I think the New York Times has been somewhat of a leader of this. You know, to their credit, they've pointed out some big problems over the years. And they had series on New Mexico racing a couple years ago that led to some reforms as well. So, you know, that's a publication that, like, every news editor in the country seems to read daily. So if they see something in there about horse racing breakdowns, then it tends to kind of spread like wildfire through the news industry. And, you know, the lack of follow-up is something that's a big problem in news organizations in the best of times, and these are not the best of times for newspapers certainly, but also for TV stations are, you know, really feeling the impact of the internet and as well. So you know, it's just kind of a combination where it's really, really unfortunate that I think people would like to hear this news. Some, you know, we get letters all the time from people saying, how come you never report on something positive? So it's a lesson for the news people as well.
Talking with Mike Brunker, who is the assistant editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Mike, my good friend Larry Colmus, who called the races at Del Mar, made his way back cross-country. He drove from Del Mar back to his home here on the East Coast, and he stopped off for a visit on his way through Kentucky. And he was telling me that during his stay in Las Vegas, which was his first stop on the way home, he got a chance to spend some time at a couple of the casinos. And he said it really, during the week anyway, was not busy. And I'm curious how the pandemic has impacted horse players that would attend the casinos and sit in the race books, and even maybe just gamblers in general. How has this impacted things in Las Vegas and on the casino side of things?
Well, it's had a pretty dramatic impact. You know, visitorship has come back a bit, but it's still way, way below where it was before the pandemic arrived. I've been out a little bit. I see, yeah, there's still people in the sports book. I go to a casino that caters to locals, and I see many of the same folks there who were there before the coronavirus arrived. So I think, you know, the people who live here, I think most of them are still going, and they've got, you know, social distancing in the books and that. So you're not sitting right next to your buddy comparing notes, but it's not a far walk away to confer either. Down on the strip, it's quiet compared to, you know, what it would be like. I mean, this time of year is a little slow anyway, but it's noticeably slower now than it would have been, you know, last year at this time.
Yeah, it's a different animal, certainly in Las Vegas, than it is in other parts of the country. And back at the end of November, Ron Flatter, who works with VSiN, had a post, a tweet, talking about the race books in Nevada and no longer booking bets on fairgrounds. And he had a column about that. You commented back to him and said, it's a sad state of affairs for Nevada horse players, continuing to grow worse. What'd you mean by that?
Well, the Nevada Paramutual Association, which represents all the casinos in the state, basically negotiates signal rights for them. And it's been involved in a dispute with Churchill Downs now that's gone on for more than a year. And, you know, Churchill wants a little bit more for its signal. The Paramutual Association doesn't want to pay that. I think the racebook operations are fairly thin margin for the casinos anyway. So we've been at a standstill ever since then. We lost the Churchill Downs access to the Churchill Downs signal right when this happened. I believe it was a year ago in October. So we haven't had any Churchill Downs racing since then, but they were allowing the other tracks they owned to continue to broadcast into Nevada. And then that changed when the fairgrounds reopened. They cut us off from that as well. So it's really an unfortunate state of affairs because, you know, both those tracks put on great racing and fans here would like to participate, but they can't unless they, you know, you can get around it. You can go to the trouble of opening an offshore account or figuring out a way to get a TVG account, you know, with an address in another state or something like that. But it's a hassle and most people don't bother.
Yeah, sad state of affairs. As if the pandemic wasn't enough, now you have to deal with this issue as well. You know, hopefully this gets resolved and things can move forward and we can all play on the same page again. But, Mike, listen, I really appreciate the visit, and I want to thank you again for taking the time to come on here this morning to talk about the positive news of Del Mar and Santa Anita going through their race meets pretty much fatality-free in 2020, which is welcome news to everybody, and we need to get that out there. But thanks for putting that article out there, and happy holidays, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, that interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love. Embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. 1,106 horses raced over the dirt track and turf course at Santa Anita. Over 51,200 training sessions. 3,771 timed workouts over the main track and 487 over the training track. It's the third time I've mentioned those numbers on the show today. I should do it another three times. The main dirt track at Santa Anita has not had a racing fatality in 2020. Let me say that again. The main dirt track at Santa Anita has not had a racing fatality in 2020. And that includes the 2019-2020 winter spring meet, which began in December. Didn't see it on CNN. Didn't see it on NBC Nightly News. Didn't see it on Headline News. And as Mike Brunker just pointed out, it's disappointing that news organizations in general don't do follow-up stories, especially when they were so quick to point out the issues that Santa Anita was having last year. Positive stuff. Kudos to Santa Anita, to the entire team, all the hard work they put in, and same to Del Mar, too. The industry-leading safety record that they boast continues to be intact after the big Crosby meet. So congratulations to both of those racetracks. Very, very well done, and that is positive news that needs to get out there for thoroughbred racing. Going to get to one final break. I'll come back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 Great Estakes winners and more lifetime Grade 1 winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and Grade 1 victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And 2-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tap It, standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
And the New York Red is going to win New York's Belmont Stakes, the first leg of the 2020 Triple Crown. Tis the law.
Authentic, tis the law. Here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Getting ready to wrap up a very busy edition of the program. Don't forget that in the December 12th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet, it's another cover-to-cover read that you will not want to miss. Features include a look at the new stallions in Kentucky, as well as regional stallions for 2021. Extreme weather events linked to climate change have impacted racetracks, and Canada's venerable Pink Lloyd takes owner on a long, enjoyable ride. All of that as part of the December 12th Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. You can download an issue right now from the Blood Horse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play. And don't miss their special going on now that includes a free 2021 Blood Horse calendar. Go to bloodhorse.com/winter special. Poll question this morning so many of you took the time to weigh in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. When do you start getting Derby fever? We're 140 days out from the Kentucky Derby. It'll be here before we know it. When do you start getting Derby fever? And it looks like the majority of you say later in the spring. 46% of HRN Nation saying, well, wait till later in the spring. 22% of you already have it. 22% said January 1st, and just 10% saying Derby week. My thanks to everybody who took time there. My thanks to all of our guests, Jason Blewett in the first half of the show, Jim Mulvihill as well, Industry Star of the Week, Kendrick Carmouche, Jack Sisterson, Tom Padula, and Mike Brunker. If you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our shows. They're there for you, horseracingradio.net. For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for Chauncey handling all of our social media again this week, appreciate your efforts, guys. And to everybody who tuned in, thanks for listening. As always, go Steelers. Let's get back on the winning track.